From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. Post-Katrina New Orleans was more than a disaster area. It was a war zone for some. There were too few police and too many problems, including looters on the streets. So a group of vigilantes in the community of Algiers Point decided to take matters into their own hands quite literally. They picked up arms, blockaded their streets, and used violence against the people they thought were looters. But did they cross the line, taking community security too far? That is the subject of an 18-month investigation by reporter A.C. Thompson from ProPublica, which is an independent nonprofit investigative reporting organization. A.C. recently wrote about his findings in an issue of The Nation magazine, and he joins me now. Welcome, A.C.
Thanks for having me on.
Let's begin with this. Point Algiers is a community inside Greater New Orleans, which largely escaped the devastation of the storm, but ran into a buzzsaw of violence right afterward. What happened?
You know, in Algiers Point, it's separated from the rest of New Orleans by the river. And basically what happened in this community, it's largely a predominantly white area that's surrounded by neighborhoods that are predominantly African-American. And about 15 to 30 folks stayed behind in Algiers Point and basically formed a neighborhood militia. And what I uncovered in my investigation was, while the group said that they were out to stop looters, if you interviewed the people who are on the other side of the guns, what you found out was that African-American males who apparently had committed no crimes were being targeted, attacked, threatened, and shot.
Now, in your article, the white residents say that it wasn't about race, but class. My question is that true, and does it make a difference?
You know, I can't get inside their heads and say what's true and what's not true. I can tell you some of the things that they said. And one vigilante told me the people who were coming into the area were hoodlums from the lower Ninth Ward, and you could look in their eyes and tell they were outlaws. Another vigilante told me, when we heard that people from the other side of the river were coming, we thought we were doomed. So that's the kind of thing that I can tell you. I can also tell you that victims of the shootings say that they were the victims of racial epithets and that the N-word was thrown out at them when they were attacked.
Was there complete lawlessness at the time? And what did the New Orleans Police Department do?
You know, undoubtedly, there was a fair amount of chaos, but I think the sense of the chaos was hyped up by the media and politicians who were talking about atrocities at the Superdome. They were talking about gangs of looters. And really, the situation on the streets was not as dire as the media portrayed it and as politicians portrayed it.
Were you able to determine to what extent, if any, there was looting and to what extent, if any, there was reason, if there was, for these people to be concerned about other folks coming into their neighborhood?
You know, I heard about a handful of crimes in the Algiers Point area. I did not hear about massive looting or criminal activity. But what it seemed like was this handful of crimes became the reason that this group got together, this militia group, and decided to keep everyone out, meaning everyone who is African American. So one man told me, well, I got carjacked. And so the next thing that I did was I got a gun. And when an African American man came down the street in front of my house, I pulled the gun on him and told him, I don't want you in my neighborhood. Now, this white vigilante man had said he'd been carjacked by an African-American. And the next thing that he did was he pulled his gun out on a random African-American man and told him to get out of the neighborhood. Problem was, the guy he was pulling a gun on was his neighbor who lived just down the street from him.
How are things there now and what has changed?
You know, the thing that's interesting to me is in interviews, eyewitnesses, people who were holding the guns, people who were shot, people who were on the scene described 11 different incidents of shooting and attacks to me. And what's interesting to me is that 3 years later, nobody has investigated these crimes. Nobody has gone and asked obvious questions, meaning the authorities, meaning the NOPD, meaning the district attorney's office. And I think that there's a sense from African-American men that I interviewed who were victimized during this time period that no one cares about what happened to them.
Well, right now we're going to expand our discussion about Algiers Point by bringing in the president of the Second Amendment Foundation, Joe Tartaro. Joe, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Joe, the aftermath of Katrina brought out a lot of ugliness, as we are hearing, for people who weathered the storm. Do you think that the residents of Algiers Point were justified in their actions?
I think they were justified in protecting their own persons and their property, their families and their homes. But wandering around the streets, as Mr. Thompson reported, sounds to me like they crossed the line.
How do you define the difference between vigilantism and self-defense?
Well, I think vigilantism is an often misused word. It does, and it, by its definition, suggest that it takes place when there is no recourse to existing constituted law. And that certainly seemed to be the case there. There was chaos in the city. There was fear, I'm sure, on everyone's part, whether they were rich or poor, or black or white, or any other color. There was a period in which there wasn't adequate lighting, water, food, and other things. And the city had been ill-prepared to deal with the horrible natural disaster that occurred, and certainly the police, from reports that I recall, and I haven't investigated it recently like Mr. Thompson, but it sounded to me like the entire police force was not on duty throughout the worst part of the storm or immediately afterward.
Let me follow up with you with one more thing, Joe, and that's this. At a time when there is chaos and there appears not to be government control or policing in an area like this, is this the time when having guns is this the best time for citizens to be armed when we're in a situation like that, in your opinion?
I think it makes sense. It's happened before. It happened with Hurricane Andrew in Florida a few years earlier. It happened with the earthquake situation in San Francisco and in Los Angeles and so on. You have a problem where you have a complete breakdown in the rule of law. And I've watched television reports in which police are stopping to talk to victims of some of these other disasters, telling them that if you need anything, tell me now because you won't see us for several days.
Well, AC, what other kinds of vigilantism did there occurred across the New Orleans area, the greater area, in those days immediately after the storm? Or was Algiers Point the only place?
You know, I've heard a lot of stories about the white neighborhoods in Uptown as well, sort of setting up barricades and having people who are armed out looking for suspected thieves and criminals. But really, Algiers Point was the hot spot where you get a lot of reports from people about shootings and about attacks and about threats. And I think that was where most of the serious violence occurred.
In reading your article, one might get the impression that the people who were in New Orleans who had something worth protecting were the white residents and that the black ones were the ones who were trying to take from them. Was it a situation also where there were black residents who were trying to protect their property in the same way that the whites were?
You know, I never interviewed any African-American residents who told me that. I did, you know, occasionally hear from middle-class blacks who'd say, you know, I was glad that the Gretna authorities sealed off the bridge over the Mississippi River and barred folks from the other side of the river from coming over here to the West Bank of the Mississippi, to that part of New Orleans, which I thought was interesting. But I did not hear a lot of stories about this kind of neighborhood watch on steroids and kind of thing going on in the African-American community. It might have, but I didn't hear about it.
Joe, from a Second Amendment standpoint, how can neighborhoods protect themselves without letting things get out of hand?
Well, I think the main thing is people should be prepared in advance. I mean, you have block clubs in many cities. You have neighbors meeting neighbors regardless of color. I've lived in integrated neighborhoods. I live right in the middle of the city of Buffalo, and we have had some problems in various parts of the city. Even in the worst riot days of the 60s and 70s, it never got like this.
AC, you, in your article, you talked about the fact that the New Orleans Police Department has really done nothing with regard to investigating any of these cases, and you've outlined what looked to be incidents of murder, and there's no statute of limitations on murder, of course. Do you think any of these cases will ever be brought to justice?
You know, I think it's certainly possible to. There are people out there who are talking. There is evidence out there that can be gathered. So it's totally possible if the authorities are motivated to go track down folks and do interviews and get evidence. Don L. Harrington is totally willing to talk to anyone who'll listen about what happened when he was shot repeatedly with a shotgun that blew out his jugular vein in his throat.
All right, gentlemen, I appreciate your coming in and talking with us, AC. It's a fascinating article, scary also at the same time. AC Thompson is a reporter from nonprofit news organization ProPublica. He joined us from the NPR studios in New York City. And Joe Totaro is the president of the Second Amendment Foundation, which promotes the constitutional heritage to own firearms. It's